What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode number 124 of Confessions of a Market Maker. I'm your co-host, Ray, aka All Day Ray, aka Cannoli Fingers. And I'm joined here by my dapper co-host, former market maker, 20 years and current day retail trader and educator, the former nightclub bouncer who'll fold your clothes with you still in them, the gorilla of House Street, JJ. How's it going?
Good brother, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good, and I'm excited for our guest. It's been a long time coming. Our guest today is the Chief Technology Officer at Trade Ideas, a consistent and profitable independent trader of 17 years. Of course, I am talking about the guy, Dave. Dave, I should have asked, is it Mabe? Maybe.
Mabe.
Dave, Mabe, Dave. Thanks so much for joining us, man. How's it going?
Great. Yeah, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the show. This is great. I've been looking forward to this.
Me too, man. Me too. I know. I think it's been like I remember messaging you. Man, it had to been like a few years now. Trying to get you on. I'm glad we were finally able to get it on. You live in North Carolina, I believe.
Yep, Carrboro, right outside of Chapel Hill, which is near Raleigh. So yeah, I've been in North Carolina my whole life.
Nice, nice man. A little humid this time of year, but I'm down in Florida, so it's pretty brutal. I think I saw before we jump into some trading stuff. I think I saw you, and I think I could be wrong, but I think I remember discussing with you a little bit. Like you're a runner. I think you coach cross country. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I ran cross country at UNC, so Division One cross country and track and field. And my wife was a really good runner. She was a professional runner for many years. She made a living doing that. And she started coaching cross country at the high school here locally, and I started helping her out. And man, it was super fun. Like, we won many state titles. That really kind of got me thinking about coaching in general and coaching traders, which I've started to do now. So, just watching and helping a developing runner at that age was really fulfilling and just super fun to do that with my wife each afternoon. And you can really a good coaching could make a big difference in somebody's life, especially at that age. So. It was just super fun.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. I'm ignorant to the cross country world. Like you as a coach, Dave, what will the coaching like entail like for a runner? Like what exactly like techniques are you helping them with? Or yeah, what would that entail?
With high school cross country, I mean, it's distance running, it's a 5K race. And the thing that you don't realize looking at it from the outside is it's very much a team sport. It's not a bunch of individuals running on their own. Like, to have a good team that wins, you have to create an atmosphere where you're willing to go to dig really deep for all your teammates and to create that kind of culture that creates that environment. It takes a long time, and it takes just spending hours and hours together, trusting each other, and doing the work over and over together as a group. So it's something that you don't really, it doesn't really dawn on you that it's very much a team sport, but like it certainly is. And that's how you get successful with teams in cross country. So it's a kind of a unique thing, and it's really interesting to see from the inside.
That's cool, man. That's cool. Building a cool culture, camaraderie. I love it. Are you still actively run, Dave?
I still run, not as much as I used to. I started cycling within the last decade or so, which turns out I really like that too, much more than I thought I would. So I do about half and half, but I exercise pretty seriously every day.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, I mean, maybe the most I'll run, Dave, a mile or two. But I like, I don't know, I like sprinting. I just like getting it done with. I like just, quick, get out of breath. Okay, I'm good. It's just, I don't know, something about the long distance. I guess it's more mentally trying, I feel like.
Yeah, I like to have a lot of variety. So, I'm not just going out and doing an easy run every day. I like to mix it up with workouts. So, like you said, like going all out for shorter amounts of time and doing hills some days where you're doing hill
Nice.
repeats. So, variety is super important. I mean, that keeps it interesting. If you're going out and doing the same hour long run or however long you go each day, that's not going to be fun after some point.
Right. And it's good for the body too, right? Switching it up,
Yeah.
giving it variety.
For
All right,
sure.
cool, cool, cool. All right. So we'll guess it's not a health and fitness podcast. We'll get to some training stuff here. No, but I love all that stuff. That's cool. And I think it is well, the discipline, I think you can draw a lot of parallels from working out the body into
I
training.
think it's not unrelated. In fact,
Right.
I consider it kind of an important part of my edge as a trader.
Nice.
It's a completely different environment than here on my trading computer. And, of course, I'd run and exercise for fitness, but really I solve a lot of problems running and cycling. I'm thinking about
Nice.
things. It's a different, completely different environment. I get time to really ponder things. And, covering ground in the way you do running or cycling, you can really get introspective, and like I said, you can solve a lot of problems. I mean, I've come up with ideas for strategies, ideas to test, solutions to problems I'm thinking about. Like, most of that stuff happens when I'm running or cycling.
That's awesome. I love to hear that. That's awesome. It's really dawned on me lately, just the I guess like the mood benefits, or like if I'm in a bad mood, or like I'm just not feeling good, I know, like, even if you don't want to just go work out, and like I don't know why it took me this long to, maybe it's just I'm more aware of it now, but yeah, incredible. Not unrelated in the slightest. Dave, yeah, man, just tell us like how you got into trading, and just, your early days.
Sure. So I mentioned I was running cross country in college. I graduated college. My dad, he was always an investor of some sort, very conservative. And that was my upbringing. So, very conservative approach. In fact, but my dad was trying different things though. Like, I remember we had some cattle. We lived out in the country. He had some cattle, like as an investment, a couple of years. So he was always dabbling in different things, but again, super conservative about money. So when I graduated college, I had a small, modest academic scholarship, and my dad said, "Hey, if you get a scholarship or get some help with college, I'll give you that money that we saved after you graduate." So I had seemed like a lot of money at the time, but it was a very modest amount of money. And so I invested that in a mutual fund. That was the first thing I did. And this was like the late 90s. So this was in the dot-com boom. I mean, it did okay. But, I was always had this in the back of my mind that I should be investing and thinking about things. And, I got, more and more interested in it. And I remember a specific trade that I made and a valuable lesson I learned. So I remember, in fact, I remember the ticker symbol. This is way back in the early 2000s. The ticker was, I'm pretty sure it was RFMD. I think they're still around.
I think they
This
are,
was
yeah.
like the darling company in North Carolina at the time. And the people I looked up to were like, "Oh yeah, they've made some money with this, investing in this stock." And they said, "Yeah, earnings are coming out, like the stock is going to do well." So I bought some RFMD, and earnings were coming up. I was like, "Man, this is going to be great." Looked at the forecast, the earnings came out, they beat the forecast, like they beat earnings. It's like, "Oh, that's, I've nailed this. This is great." And what do you think happens? The stock tanks. And in that moment, I was thinking, gosh, there's no way I could possibly predict this. There's no way I have an edge in this situation. So it was really in that moment that I realized, I have to have a more systematic edge where I actually have an edge. And like what I was trying there was just not going to work. So it was really a big realization for me that, okay, this is, I got to, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it my way. And this is not the right way to do it.
So that was like the light bulb moment for you to go down a systematic route. So I guess tell us about that. So what happened from there?
So, at that moment I realized, okay, well, the news comes out after hours, like, and you can't really trade after hours. There wasn't a whole lot of, I mean, there wasn't any after hours trading at the time, I'm pretty sure. So I thought about my time frame just got shorter and shorter. I was like, okay, what about day trading? Like, I know that's risky. My dad is not gonna like that if I tell him I'm gonna day trade. But at the time, there was actually a pretty vibrant blogosphere. You guys remember blogs? I mean, there's not a ton of them anymore, but at the time, there was a pretty vibrant community of trading blogs, people sharing ideas. And I dug into that and determined, figured out a system to start trading, looking at some of these blogs. So I was like, I think I can try this. And in fact, I don't know if you guys remember Trader Mike. You remember Trader Mike, the blog?
No, sounds familiar.
It was like the most popular one at the time. And the guy's name is Mike Seneca. He lives in Atlanta. And he was day trading. He was trading this particular system that I was interested So I just emailed him and said, hey, Mike, can I, I'm coming down there. One of my relatives lives down there. Can I just watch over your shoulder for a day or so? And he's like, sure. So I went down and, watched him trade. He was kind enough to let me look over his shoulder. And I was like, I think I can do this. So before I made my first trade, my first day trade, I really had to, I realized I had to prepare and really come up with a good plan to tell my dad that this is what I was going to do. Because I knew, like,
He's gonna lose it.
he was going to lose it. Like, what are you doing, Dave? So I really kind of over prepared, I think. I was just, I wanted to make sure I dotted all my I's, crossed all my T's. And so when I started day trading, I was actually profitable right away. And for a long time, I thought, man, I was just so lucky that I just lucked into this system that happened to work. Like, people go for years without being profitable when they first start. And, but what I realized, after a long time thinking about it, I was just my upbringing, like, my dad was so conservative, having to explain this to him, like, I was just uber prepared, like, over prepared, and like I said, crossed every T, dotted all the I's. And so I started day trading, and it was, it worked pretty well right off the bat. I wasn't crushing it, but I was profitable right away, and that was enough to really keep me interested. I had a full-time job at the time, so this was something I was doing on the side, but I realized, okay, this is something that could be a serious hobby for me, and I was really interested in it.
Nice. Do you remember like what was the you remember like the first like strategy like you were using?
It was a gap trading strategy. So I would look for gapping trade or gapping stocks and look for a specific pattern after they gapped and then get in and then hold it the rest of the day. So it's basically like an intraday trend following system. And I would trade it. There'd be a long side and a short side. And I traded that same, actually, I still trade a variant of that strategy today. It's not as great as it was back then, but I still trade a version of it today. So it's kind of a funny story. That strategy, traders as they, or at least me as I matured and progressed as a trader, at some point you've got a system and it's kind of working, and you come up like, for me at least, this system was working for probably 3 or 4 years. I was like, okay, I'm just gonna, I figured this out. I'm just gonna scale this thing up more and more over time, and that'll be that. I was reviewing my trades each day. I had a really good workflow and process for making sure that I was on top of things, and I would do a pretty in-depth end of year review. So I would look at all my trades and see, how I can improve those, how I could get better. And in my reviews, I was like, well, I just need to scale up this thing more. So that was the goal in that particular year. I don't remember which year it was, but it was probably 3 or 4 years after I started training the strategy. And I was in a drawdown. I was like, well, I've looked at this data before. I know how, I have confidence. I've traded this thing for a long time. I just need to stick with this and at the same size, because I know times before I've sized down, and then that's when the system starts working well. You're like, gosh, left all this profit on the table. But it didn't really turn around. So here I was in this drawdown. That and for me, like when you have a drawdown like that as a trader, like your first really serious drawdown as you're scaling up, like it really messes with you. Like that, I mean, this is like you, especially when you have a specific strategy that you traded for a while, like that's what you do. That's the kind of trader you are. And when that stops working, you're like, holy crap, like my whole existence, like what am I doing here? And that was just super hard for me. And what I realized is, okay, this is not working right now, and it sucks badly to be in this position. I do not want to ever be in this position again. So I really wanted to create some tools for myself that I was never going to end up in this dead end like that. So it took me a while, but day after day I would work on my tools and the way I looked at strategies to make sure that I always had a roadmap for the strategies, like a quicker way to come up with new strategies. And I really dove in and have this workflow that really worked well for myself. That I was able to basically come up with new strategies way quicker than before and improve strategies way quicker than before. So, and it was all because this drawdown sucked and I did not want to have that happen ever again. Like that, it was horrible.
Well, that's all. I mean, that's like a great example of like using a I guess like a perceived negative, right? But it turned out to be a great lesson, a great a great thing for you going forward. I'm curious just to maybe like some of the details, Dave, if you want to like touch on that. Like you mentioned it improved your process. You were able to come up with or find new strategies like quicker. Could you maybe just like touch on a little of the details there?
Sure. So I remember, the particular strategy I was trading. I thought, I had heard about this backtesting thing, and I had been, I was working at a big company, AT&T, at the time. So I was still doing all this on the side, and I was really at AT&T. I was pretty much like an automation expert. So I had sort of made a name for myself for just automating tasks, and so I was, taught myself programming there, and make things more and more efficient there. So that was sort of in my, innate in my personality. So I thought, I wonder if I could automate what I'm doing here with these trades. So it was a very, it was a discretionary system. You know, I was deciding whether to take the trades, but it was very systematic. Like it was a, definitely rules I was following. And I had had some, you know, whenever you're click trading or manual trading, you notice like you make some mistakes, right? People aren't perfect. Like you make, like have you ever made a trade where you accidentally put on one extra zero into your position size, or
Plenty,
maybe
plenty.
even
Of course.
worse,
Yeah.
maybe even worse, like one too few. I think that's probably
Yeah.
even worse than one too many zeros.
We flat finger stuff all the time.
So I, you know, I did that a few times. I was like, man, you could get rid of a lot of those silly mistakes by automating a lot of this. So at first I thought, okay, I'm going to create a program to enter my trades. Now, maybe not manage them, you know, not fully automated. Let's just enter the trades automatically, get rid of a lot of those mistakes. So that was my first foray into automated trading and sort of the first thought into back testing. And then I thought, well, you know, that's working pretty well. It's getting rid of almost all the order entry mistakes. What if I back tested this? What if I, you know, and you know, as you're a d discretionary trader, you come to think of your discretion as really awesome. Like this could never be reproduced in a back test, right? It's this, and what I realized, so I said, well, you know, I've been doing this a while. This is what I do. There's a lot of discretion there. There's no possible way I could recreate that in code. It's too complex, you know. I'm too good at this, right? So, but I said, well, let me see if I can get close, maybe. So I created a back test for what I was doing, and like right away, I found a way to make it better than what I was doing. So here I thought all this discretion was so awesome and could be recreated. And like the very first back test, I found a way like to make it better than what I was doing. So I was like, okay, well this is silly. Like I can create more trades for myself. They could be more accurate. With this back test, I have this like reference that I can check against every day to make sure I'm doing what I plan to do. And you know what I had researched, so that was eye-opening for me, and just that opened up a whole new world of things I could test and things I could, you know, ideas I could verify. I kind of call back testing like I often call it a BS detector. You see all sorts of theories on Twitter and on the internet about, you know, when you should do certain things in the market, and like, well, let's test it. Let's see what happens when you actually do that. Is that true? So that opened up a whole new world for me to test my ideas, and you know, it's like I felt like it was a superpower. Like, you know, any idea you could test and see what works and what doesn't work.
Awesome. Yeah, and I got a bunch of back testing questions, and I think, I mean, I know it was a while since I think we had some brief like maybe messaging back and forth. I forget, but I think I mentioned like you know, when I finally stumbled upon trade ideas, it was it resonated, and it was real big for me because, you know, like you're talking about discretionary, it's I didn't feel like I had any roots or any like basis where, like, you know, I would came from playing poker, and like poker software and the solvers would give you like a basis, like you had an idea of like what's correct play, like at least within certain like, you know, confines, or just like having something to reference my play with. And like, you know, back testing, like you were saying, having something like just having a basis, something to like you know, reference, like just kind of be rooted in, was just huge for myself. And I got a bunch of questions here coming up for back testing, and we just got to take a quick time
Great.
out here to announce that the Micro E Futures trading room is now offering a 7-day free trial with no obligations, offering not only ES, where JJ teaches and trades, but other futures, instruments, stocks, crypto, And for my real degenerates, we got DFS and sports betting, which I am highly active in. Again, that's a 7-day free trial, no obligations or commitment. Come join us at microefutures.com. I guess before we jump into some of the back tests, I'm just curious for myself, Dave. So, I guess like when you first started back testing, well, like what year was this roughly?
Probably 2014 or so, 2013, somewhere in there.
Okay, so were you trading a good deal before? I mean, I think you were right. Like, so were you discretionary for probably up until around that point?
Yeah, I was definitely discretionary. But discretionary, but trading a system. Like I had
Right.
rules. Like, so looking back, yeah, I was deciding whether to take trades, but it was very, it was very systematic. So,
For sure.
for a while, I always thought that, I always thought that, discretionary traders are, I wasn't sure if there were are any very successful discretionary traders, but I've definitely seen some, and there are some out there, but it's really hard. It's hard for me, especially now after having back tested for so long. It's hard for me to imagine, getting enough experience to have the confidence to trade a strategy with size if you don't have a back test.
Just out of curiosity, let me just jump in. There's something that really intrigued me when you were talking about when you had that big drawdown and how that was really difficult on you. And how that was, mentally difficult. Can you talk a little bit? This is the sort of the magic for the people who are listening, who are going through that, because they're trying things, it doesn't work. They might have s little bouts of success and then it turns. How did you go from having that drawdown to back where you could see the light again in trading? Can you kind of walk us a little bit through that process of how you manage that? How you pulled yourself out of that.
It's really, I think every trader goes through that, whether they care to admit it or not. But the ones that are successful, they get to a point where I think they have a moment, kind of like I did, where you feel like you have figured something out and that you don't like you're done with your research at that point. Like it's just a matter of executing the system. But really, the hardest part of trading and where you have to be able to conquer this if you're going to be in it for the long term is you have to be able to adapt. Like you have to be able to reinvent what you do every so often. And you have to have it like a system for doing that. And it's super hard. I mean, that, you literally have to reinvent everything about what you do every so often. And a lot of people just cannot do that. Like, you have to
Exactly.
have a system, a process for doing that, and know that that's coming in the future and be prepared for it. And it's just hard.
Cool. Yeah, no, it's I come from the business, so it's when the business changes, I found that too, going from that to retail, where you have to adapt because on the other side you're working at agenda, you're selling 5 million shares of stock or accumulating a position or working out a position for insiders or whatever. But for retail people, the markets have agendas, and when those agendas change, they have to change their systems and the way they execute. And if they don't understand the underlying business, it's even harder for them to execute change because they really don't know what they're supposed to be adapting. So it's fascinating to talk to guys like you who do things completely on an automated scale to see how you guys think and work your way back from, from drawdowns into being profitable again, and and also work through the emotional part of that, especially if you're trading size and you've got drawdowns with size. I know what it's like to look at an account and see a $14 million hole in it. So I've it's not those when you're working at a brokerage firm, people make mistakes and you look in these accounts and you're like, oh my God, we got to clean this up. And so yeah, it's very, because a lot of our retail traders would be fascinated to know how you got that, how you sort of worked your way back.
Yeah, I would say that, I started back testing, first of all. Yeah, I think there's only really two ways to gain confidence in what you do to be able to increase your size over time. And that's experience trading a system. Day in and day out, you're trading it, you're becoming more confident in it. That takes a lot of time, right? To get to the point where you can trade with significant size. The other way is back testing. I feel like it's kind of a shortcut. You can start now and go back and simulate what would have happened over a period of time. And that's the other way to get confidence. Now, again, trading experience, that is the most valuable. That's more valuable than back testing. But when you can combine both of those, that is really the way to gain confidence over time.
Dave, what would you say is the biggest limitation for backtesting?
I would say, you have to have a certain mind to be able to do it. You have to have some technical skills. One marker of if you can be good at it is, do you like Excel or not? Like, some people just don't like Excel, but some people like Excel. But it is a theoretical simulation. So it's not, of course, it's not actual trades you're making in the market. These are simulated trades. And there are limitations with that. There are trade-offs. So there is a little bit of a learning curve and just even understanding how the back testing works and what it's presenting you with and what that information actually means. A lot of people will find a back test because it's so easy to do and trade ideas, and you can set up a strategy, just start trading it today, right? You can do that really quickly. And if you're not careful about that, and you don't paper trade first, and you don't trade with small size next, you need a process for doing that. If you don't, then a lot of traders will just see, okay, well, my actual trades didn't match the back test. Wow, the back test sucks, man. What a terrible piece of software. But it's really because you're not understanding what the back test is telling you and what it's testing on. How is, what is the data that the back test is simulating on? And the more information you understand about that, the more you can have that back tester work for you and tell you what you need to know and can help you find edge.
Well, that's a, a great thing with the trade ideas backtest for someone like myself who does not like Excel, who couldn't I couldn't set any of this stuff up myself, and so having just the simplicity of it is awesome, and just giving, we're talking about just like giving me more confidence, in the I trade discretion, but like you were mentioning before, it's a system, you know what I mean? I have a system for it, and just having that confidence. Yeah, it's just, I swear, I feel like we could probably talk about this all day. I have a ton of questions, but I'll try and keep it concise. I guess I think something that might be helpful, for myself, for the listeners as well. Let's just say, Dave, we were starting, we wanted to, back test, so we start a strategy from scratch here. Can you maybe just give us some insight into your approach or like your process, into back testing?
A lot of people will start back testing, and then they sort of start from the data, and they have the data like suggest what to do next. I think it's always good to start from a chart, like start from a chart and look at many charts, and start from things you actually see in the market. We have there's a free tool that Trade Ideas provides called Stocks Like This. It's actually pretty novel because it lets you pick a point on a chart and specify, okay, Apple at this particular time. And you can go back and look at every event that occurred during that time period. So what it allows you to do is look at a specific move in a chart and see every event that occurred and use that as a starting point for a strategy. Like, when I look at a chart, like let's say Apple makes a big move and you look at it. That particular, I think most, a lot of traders will look at that move and be interested in this one specific move from Apple. But the first thing I think about is, okay, can this generalize across the entire market? Like it happened for Apple here once, but can I create a strategy and see how many times this happened over the entire market and create some trading instructions around that? So I think it's always good to start from the chart, and that tool, like I said, Stocks Like This, is a really nice way to make a really hard, a surprisingly hard problem to look at a chart and try to create a strategy out of that. It's trickier than it seems. Like you can just look at the
For
charts.
sure.
Oh, well, I'll just go along right here, right? But that is a really difficult problem to solve. And that Stocks Like This tool is a really, really novel way to kind of make it reverse, like figure out, okay, what were the events that even happened during that time that I could choose from? So it makes, like I said, it makes an infinitely hard problem much less hard, but still hard.
For sure. I know. The hours I've spent trying to like pinpoint exactly what I want, it could be infuriating. But I kind of like doing that type of work though. It's really fun. And I think you're just more in tune with what you're trying to do. I really enjoy it. I guess simple question. I'm sure you probably get this a lot. It's probably a standard question, but like what would constitute in your mind, Dave, as a good sample size of trades when backtesting to feel confident in the results?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the more the better. Gosh, the minimum I would say, man, I don't know. I've got systems that trade just a few times a year, but then others that trade 15 times a day. So I think it depends. And there, I think a lot of it comes from experience, and a lot of there's not really a hard and fast rule for some of these things, but you just get better and better over time of figuring out how much is, how many trades is best. But I would say I'm always looking for systems that trade very frequently. I want a lot of trades to start with, because that way when you part of our process is figuring out what portion of the trades are worst and get rid of those. So the more you can start out with in that process, the better. Like the better what you end up with, the strategy that you end up with will be better the more trades you start with. So I'm always looking at the most number of trades I can start with and whittle away the worst portion of those trades to come up with a system that, has the most average profit per trade, but also the most total profit. So, I know that, the systems that trade pretty infrequently, like if it's months that go by between a trade, like they lose my interest. Like I need something to happen pretty frequently to kind of stay in tune with it. And I think, part of the process is watching trades that come through a system every day and having a daily review process for those. Super important to stay in tune with the market, with what your trades are doing, how they're working, what trades almost met the criteria for the system but didn't quite. Like that's a good source for new edge. And you need to be watching those and say, okay, well, like if you have a good process for watching the market each day like this, you can figure out tweaks you can make to your system or new edges you can come up with as a result of watching the market each day. So I have a very specific process that I use for doing that. And there's so much noise out there. I don't want to look at everything. I only want to look at the most important stuff. So I really think a lot about streamlining my whole workflow and process to where I'm looking at the important stuff and I'm doing that every day in an efficient and efficient as a way as possible.
I love that. I love
Cool.
that.
Very cool.
How many strategies are do you run, Dave, like currently?
I've got like 15 or 20, depending on how you count them.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of strategies. It's a lot of that comes from the process I created a decade ago to come up with strategies quickly. Part of that's back testing. Part of it's like an optimization process that I have for those. And a lot of us just, grinding in a day in and day out with that daily process of figuring out, okay, how can I improve these? And, one thing I've noticed is, you have to be really organized. When you trade that many strategies, you gotta be super organized. And so I've got like a library of strategies that I keep track of and keep documentation on, and they end up feeding off each other. So if I'm working on another strategy now and I come across some realization or some feature I found that's predictive and would make the strategy better, oftentimes like it's a light bulb where like, well, okay, I can go back now to strategy 1, 2, 5, and 6, and like it should be predictive there. Like what I've just discovered here, it should have implications there too. So I can go back and improve those. So it's like this iterative process that improves over time. And it doesn't come like there's not an improvement every single day. Like you have to put a process in place where sometimes there's a long time before you have these light bulb moments, but as long as you have a process in place where you're putting yourself in a position to observe these and be in tune with the market and test things, like you'll have the light bulb moments. It may not be this week or next week, but you have a good process in place and they'll come.
Yeah, I love the emphasis on the
That's
process. And
great.
I forget, man, I forget the book. I think it was Mastery, maybe, but it talks about like, yeah, it just made me think of when you're talking about like the light bulb moments that it's like almost like a plateau. Like you plateau for so long, and then you'll have like an insight, and it's like a you get this like upward, like almost like a parabolic type of chart. But it's probably from all that grinding and all that work. Then you just got to like stick with it to get those
For
type of
sure.
moments, I think.
I used to I, so I used to think that some people were just born with an innate ability to come up with strategies. And because I would see people and they could come up with these ideas. I was like, man, I can never come up with ideas like that. How do you do it? And the more traders I've talked to and worked with over the years, there's really no secret. Like you could come up with ideas. You just have to have a good process for doing it. There's no secret. There's no innate ability. You're not born with an ability to come up with strategies. It's just what you do and how good your process is day in and day out. That's how you do it. I mean, there's no real shortcut or secret to doing it. That's
I
how you
love it.
do it.
I love that. I love that. Dave, kind of like how you like mentioned early on when like a strategy, the first strategy stopped working, and like you had that like that moment where you had to make strategies quickly. I'm just curious to do you find like now the current strategies that you're running, do you find that like you've been using these for a while now, or like I'm sure you probably review them and tweak them a little bit here and there. Like how often do you find yourselves adding new strategies or changing strategies or anything of the like?
So kind of a little secret, like I don't give up on strategies. Like And to be able to do that, you have to think from the very beginning, at every point in the process when you're creating a strategy, you have to have long-term robustness in mind at every step. So, like, I'm trying at every point to make this thing robust and last for a long time. Partly because, the programmers kind of joke sometimes that they're lazy, they're inherently lazy. It's kind of that. Like, it's a hard process to come up with strategies. So once I come up with them, like, I want them to last. I don't want to have to go back all the time and be retweaking them. So I, from the very beginning, at every point of the process, I really value and think hard about, okay, am I fooling myself here when I'm thinking about this rule and I want to apply it? Like, is this rule going to last for the long term, or am I just fooling myself here? So I think a lot about that. And as a result, like, I've had strategies that I've been trading almost untouched for a decade, like, not quite untouched, but pretty much unchanged for 8 years, I think I've had one. So that's an important part of what I do, I think.
Cool. I really for listeners too, go check out Dave's website. DaveMabe.com, is that what it is? I've really you're I really enjoy over the years reading your like articles. Really tell, especially when it comes to what we're talking about, like, backtesting and like kind of just leading me in the right direction on like maybe what some of your like favorite like filters or like the indicators to backtest around. Do you want to just share what maybe with the audience maybe what some of your favorite filters and indicators are?
There's I do have an article on the site for that. There's I think, when you're coming up with strategies that work for, that have staying power, that work for a long term, that you don't have to go back and tweak, you really want to think about filters that are normalized. So, relative volume is one I always look at. ATR is one I always look at. A lot of it depends on the specific strategy, but in general, I would say make sure what you're looking at is normalized. So what I mean by that is, instead of looking at just volume today, you want to look at relative volume. Like, what does it do compared to what it normally does? And that's going to be, you're going to end up with a way more robust strategy when you think about filters that normalize. Those are ones that I often use. The I've got some more out there that I can't think of right now, but yeah, there's I like writing about the markets, as you have read some of the articles. I've got a free email newsletter that anybody can sign up for. I really enjoy writing stuff to it. So, and I love the feedback I get. I mean, I get a lot of feedback from the articles I write, and I try to be helpful. Like, I want as many people to succeed as possible. So that's sort of my the way I think about it and the way I think about that newsletter.
Yeah, I like them a lot. Definitely, people listening, go out there, go read them. Oh yeah, I wanted to ask you, Dave, like, on the strategies that you're running, what's the like the distribution from like long to short strategies?
They're mostly short, not all, but I would say probably 60% short.
Interesting.
Most of the money I've made over the years is on the short side. I just think it's a little easier to find edge there.
That's
So I
interesting you
would
brought.
say,
So sorry to interrupt. That's interesting because I was going to ask you that, like, and I'm like probably fairly rudimentary with, backtesting and like finding strategies, but I've always noticed it's way easier finding short strategies with a, a nice profit factor, which I also want to ask you about. But yeah, sorry for jumping in there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why that is. I guess just, things fall harder than they go up. But yeah, I think that's, I would say that's generally true for a certain type of trader. They're going to find more edge on the short side. It makes it a little more difficult because you have locates to worry about, and but in general, that's the breakdown for me right now.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, so what, for someone like myself, right, Dave, when I'm back testing, what's a profit factor you think, someone should shoot for, in a back test?
That's a good question. And again, there's not like a specific one, but I would say, 1.5 would be like a minimum, I think, of what you could shoot for. Like I said, it all depends. Like I look at, I do look at profit factor, but I look at other things too. Like I look at total profit. That's really probably the one of the most important things that I look at. Like if I'm looking at optimizing a strategy, like if theoretically, if you think about it, you could optimize your strategy down all the way down to one trade, like and you're sure that that's going to be profitable, right? Or you're pretty certain. But that's no good, right? Like you can't wait around all the time, a long time twiddling your thumbs, waiting for this one trade. So, I think a lot about total profit, average profit per trade, profit factor, but I consider all those things. And really, the most important thing I do is look at the equity curve because that's going to show you a lot. And that all those numbers we were talking about, that distills all that down into a single number. But the equity curve is a nice picture of every trade that happens. So that's going to reveal a lot more than distilling it down to a single number.
So something I think of, just as we were, talking about this, and specifically with the shorts, something I thought about it, guess just want your take, like, because some of these shorts, let's say I can't get any borrows, right? And then because I've gone back and I looked at some of the biggest, contributing to the results of the back test were on some of the, I couldn't get any shares. I couldn't borrow any shares. How much would, because I think to myself, like, how much is this really impacting some of the results? If like some of the biggest trades I couldn't even, is that something maybe I filter out, or like, I don't know, I guess just what are your thoughts on that?
So each day I will review my live trades compared to the back test. So I'll see. So I've got a reconciliation report that I run and I'll see which ones I'm missing, that the back test took. What are the, how much slippage did I have in live compared to the back test? Slippage on the way in, slippage on the way out. All these things are factors that will cause your live trading to underperform the back test. That's part of the game. So in your situation, what I would do is I would trade it for a while, keep track of the ones you're missing, and make note, okay, did I miss this because I didn't have a borrow? And or did I miss it for some other reason? Like, was my entry order not dialed in? Like, could I make the entry order better so I could not miss as many trades? And then over time, you're going to see, okay, well, I can figure out, I can move to a broker where I can use locates to get some of these trades. And when you look at it in aggregate, you'll get a much better picture, and you can like make a business case to yourself for finding another broker, or you can at least gauge how much am I missing because of this, and classify that and see how that works over a large number of your trades.
Right. Awesome. Okay, I guess moving on past the back test. That was awesome. I really enjoyed that, talking on that. I believe Trade Idea, I believe you guys have had it been using AI for a while now, and obviously past couple of years AI has become like a real hot topic. Can you, I guess, can you just kind of just give us a rundown from like when you guys first were using the AI to like, you know, what it's at right now, and I guess just AI's role in trading in general.
Yeah, so actually the Holly AI that we have at Trade Ideas, I created that from the process that I created for myself years ago when I was in that dead end. So it was a natural extension of that. And you know, we've been doing this a long time, and you know, we do have a lot of people come to Trade Ideas wanting to, I would say, like blindly follow
Sure.
the Holly AI. And that's not the best way to use it. The best way that people have success with Holly is to use it as a reference to come up with their own strategies. So these are being optimized each night, and you can see, okay, here's what a strategy looks like that has edge. And the traders that have the most success using it are the ones that look at it not to blindly follow and do whatever whatever Holly does. The best traders look at it and use it to come up with and brainstorm their own ideas for their own strategies. I mean, that's fundamentally when traders have their turning point and become successful. It's when they let go of the notion that they're going to be following somebody else, following what somebody else does, and really take control of what they do and know that there's nobody that's going to come up with a strategy for you, and it's going to be better when you come up with it. So when traders, that's when really traders turn the corner, is when they really truly internalize that you are responsible for your own success, and you have to do it. And nobody's going to tell you how to do it and what to do.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, I don't know. It's always perplexing to me. It's interesting that this I don't know. It seems like it's more on the rare side to find someone who wants to like do it themselves or like learn it. Like everyone just wants to get spoon-fed stuff, but
Yeah.
interesting. I would assume Holly's gotten better over time. Like, is there any like, you know, once again, something I'm like not really versed in or understand well with AI, but obviously it's been really hot lately. So has it, you know, has yeah, I guess Holly gotten better over time, or like anything like impacting like AI and trading right now?
So, you know, I have kind of a contrarian take on ChatGPT and trading. I don't think that, like, it's helpful for, like, a lot of traders will look at it and say, okay, hey, ChatGPT, come up with a strategy that's profitable. Like, what's the best strategy to come up with? Well, ChatGPT is never going to be able to answer that for you, right? Because if it was, then the market would quickly adapt to
Sure.
what that strategy was. Like, it's constantly adapting. So I'm not like ChatGPT can help you do specific things, but to ask it such a broad question, like, okay, come up with a profitable strategy for me, that's not going to work. So, Holly is based on machine learning, and it's adapting to what the market is doing right now. So that's what it does. We do have, we have improved it over time, and there are tweaks we make to it all the time. And that's a big initiative I have now, is to, make the performance even better for Holly. And there's definitely ways we could do it. It's worked well for a long time, but there are ways we can improve it to make what it does even better.
Awesome. Where's the name Holly come from? Did you was that you or
That was a Dan Merkin thing. Dan came up with that. It's a clever name. I like. Dan's the. He can come up with some good names like that. So.
Cool, man. I think, Dave, I think back to when we had Dan on, man. Oh my God, years ago. And like some of the stuff, like he's a character, obviously, as you know. But some of the stuff he said, and like what people messaged me about, like some of his theories and stuff, like, so it was just hilarious. I didn't respond back to anybody, but like some people were like in
He's
outrage,
got a
like.
lot of crazy theories. But Dan has a method to his madness. So
Sure.
he's some people misunderstand him, but he's definitely got a method to his madness.
I can see that. I can see that. I really enjoyed that conversation with him. That was funny. I'll get you on your way here, Dave. I just have my I picked out some topics that you had from your articles that I thought might be like, quick, good quick discussion here. That I thought were interesting. You had one on taking partial profits. What are your thoughts around that?
Well, one of the things you often hear, going back to the BS detector thing, like take half off and let the rest of it ride. Like it seems like a great compromise. But when you do the numbers, like you trade off a lot of profit for doing that. So that became really clear to me early on when I would take a partial of a trade that was doing well, and then it would go and continue on. And I realized, man, taking that partial cuts off a lot of profit from what I could make. So it's really clear from backtesting that compromise you make is pretty costly, costlier than most people think it is. So just keep that in the back of your mind that there is a trade-off that comes with that, and it may or may not be worth it to you to do that, to take a partial profit. But it's worth, I mean, good traders will go and think about that and look at the numbers and actually see, the big thing for me is what works across a large number of trades. I'm trying to maximize the profit for my systems, and partial profits were not doing that. It made me feel a little better doing it, but it doesn't maximize your profit.
It's like one of those things where the numbers and like your feelings are diverging, right? Because that's probably the only I don't want to say pro for it, but yeah, I guess just to feel better, right? Like it's more psychologically soothing, I suppose. But makes a ton of sense. When an individual, let's say a newer person, or I mean, I guess you could even say experience, right? But like, how should someone think about day trading versus swing trading, and maybe what they should choose, or both?
It's a good question. A lot of people have a lot of different opinions about it. I like day trading. I like going home flat at the end of every day. I mean, there's a lot of freedom in that. There's, you
Amen.
know, there's no sleepless nights worrying about what a position's going to do. So that's always my default. I hardly ever swing any positions, and I'm not like opposed to it. It's just that I've found enough edge day trading, and that resonates with me. And it's great to be flat at the beginning and end of every day. So, and you avoid all the news, or most of the news comes out after hours. So you avoid all of that too. So there just seems to be so many advantages to me that, that's my preference for sure. I know it's not everybody's preference.
As far as like a back testing edge wise, have you just found more edge day trading, or it's just more because that's just something you're more comfortable doing, day trading?
I think both. You get more buying power intraday, so it's a more efficient use of your buying power. avoid overnight gaps, which that's of course a double-edged sword too. There's a lot of money in those
Sure.
overnight gaps, which could go in your direction, could not go in your direction. But I always thought that, people other traders I'm quote competing against, once you start holding overnight, that's a whole different class of people that you're competing against. Those are investors, those are longer term traders, those are
Good point.
bigger, it's
Exactly.
bigger money that you're competing against. So I always thought that I have a better edge intraday.
That's a really interesting point I never thought of. I like that. That makes a ton of sense. About the who you're competing against when you're going on that time frame too. That's really interesting. Just a quick thought I had. Have you ventured into like backtesting like in the crypto market at all?
I haven't looked at crypto much because there's here's my reasoning why. I feel like I have an edge when I'm scanning the entire market. I've created a strategy. I'm scanning the entire market for that strategy. Like how often could that possibly, this setup possibly happen in Bitcoin? Like there's only a small number of coins that you can even trade. So for me,
Yeah.
I feel like that defeats the whole purpose of where I feel like I have the most edge. So I'm not, like I said, I'm not opposed to it. I know people do trade Bitcoin or crypto. It's just never really resonated with me because of that, because I just feel like I have this edge that I'd be it's sort of orthogonal to my main edge.
Makes sense. Makes sense. Last question here. I guess your thoughts on sizing up, or do you use like a consistent trade size on all your strategies?
When you have so many strategies, they're all in various different parts of their lifetime. So some I've just started up, and some I've been trading for a long time, so I feel much more confident in those. So all of them have different sizes, and I will scale up pretty slowly, I think, compared to most traders over time. So scaling up, I mean, sizing is really hard. There's a huge psychological component to it. The tendency for most traders is to scale up way too quickly. And of course, when you scale up quickly, then all of a sudden your equity curve, which was looking good, of course, you have a regular bad trade and you're down negative. And that's super psychologically difficult.
It
So
is.
I always advocate, like, have a plan for how you're going to scale this up. What are the milestones the strategy needs to get to before you scale up? And have a plan for doing that. Otherwise, you like so many things in trading, humans do like the least profitable thing if you don't have a plan, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
You're going to take profit too soon. You're just going to do the wrong thing. And that the same thing with like figuring out your position size. Like it's a very emotional thing. Have a plan ahead of time. When you reach milestones, then scale up or scale
Yeah.
down.
So
Perfect.
essentially your trade size is on the co confidence in your strategy, essentially. Is that what?
Yeah, I mean, how long I've had that strategy in play and how confident I am in it. So,
Is it at all like correlated to a profit factor, or it's more like, okay, I got to test this in real time first, and then is that where it's coming from?
yeah, I guess depending on the, I mean, there's some strategies that I'm more confident in based on specific numbers, like you mentioned, but most of it's from, seeing how the trades play out in real time and comparing that to the back test. When you do that, like we said earlier, you got this reference point that you can use, and you can see how the live trades differ from the back test. And when you get a good sense of that, and you've done your back test for a long period of time, then slowly you get more and more confident in that strategy, and you can feel like, okay, I can book better. Like, I know what the worst day is going to look like. I know I will have one of those days in the future. So here I'm comfortable with this size, knowing that one of those days is going to come in the future at some point.
Makes total sense. I it's probably like the hardest thing, at least for me, I think, trading wise. And like you mentioned, how just psychologically difficult it is to when like you do hit a loss, and it's a normal loss, but it's now it's more magnified, and it's it can really tilt. It's a tough thing. So thanks for answering that. That's why I had a you wanted to dig into your brain there a little bit on that. And so yeah, so that's going to conclude today's episode of Confessions of a Market Maker. If you guys enjoyed this episode, please rate and review it for us. If you'd like to join a supportive professional trading room, you can join us at microefutures.com. Dave, tell the people where they can find you, anything else you want them to know.
You can reach me at davemabe.com is the website. There's a free newsletter. You can sign up and get those delivered to your email. I write one every week and really enjoy doing that. And I'll just have to say, I really appreciate you guys having me on here. I remember, I've listened to the show for a long time. There was a period where I didn't listen to it, probably a year ago. I was busy and couldn't listen. And I think I listened to your show on with Linda Rashke, and it really struck me. I was on a bike ride. I was listening to it. It really struck me, like, from the previous time I'd listened to that point, you guys have really got your stuff dialed in. Like, it was a noticeable improvement, and you guys were it seemed to be hitting on all cylinders. So you got keep doing what you're doing. This is great.
Dave, that means a lot, man. Thanks a lot. I didn't know you listened to the show previously. That means a lot, man. Thanks a lot,
Well, it
man.
means a lot because Ray, I gotta say too, Ray's really worked. Really, really hard to become like a really good interviewer. So really, we're really proud of him.
Yeah, well, it shows. I mean, you guys are I love what you guys are doing. Well,
Appreciate that.
okay.
That means the world. That means the world. And we'll end on that good note there. So for Dave, Mabe, I'm Paulie Walnuts. He's a gorilla of House Street. We'll see you next time.